Accession number 23364, Reel 3.
Just beyond the Suda Bay. So we went down the road, and the Greeks were very good to us on the road. We were 2 days on the road with the carriers. They weren't very fast on the road, you see. And they used to give us eggs, boiled eggs, and that on the road. And krasi, that was the drink, krasi, wine, strong too. I had to stop all of my drivers drinking it. And they were guzzling it like lemonade. I said, that's enough. So, young Snowden was would have been a very good officer. But then when we got to Heraklion, Mr. Snowden said, this is what we've got to defend. This is our position, the drone. That's the runway. The high points there are the Charlies. And that's where headquarters will be. And there, over there, there's prison, which will be part of your responsibility. The slaughterhouse and prison, slaughterhouse and the barracks.
Yes.
And he said, that's it. He said, but what we've got to do is dig the carriers in and cart the dirt away. Well, the dirt and rocks. He says, dump all the waste into the sea. We were only about 20, 30 yards from the sea.
Yes.
It was a big job. Mm. We were carrying it in buckets and everything. Mm. And the local workmen rolled, we got barrels and everything. But we cleared it. We dug the carriers in to ground level and then camouflaged the tarpaulin over the top. And the orders were, Colonel Hamilton was then commanding, to use brushwood, and whenever we moved a carrier or moved ourselves, cover the marks because of the recce planes. We did this very well. And not to open up on the Messerschmitts or the bombers to wait on the troops. Well, it's a funny sound. We were in Slitters. The carriers were just off. We were in Slitters the other side. And when the Messerschmitts, all the Messerschmitts, they strafed the Drome area to try and draw fire.
Yeah.
And the colonel had said, don't return fire. So, at that time, the lads were well trained. And by then, he learned semaphore. There wasn't any wireless. I'd learned semaphore. And the Messerschmitts went away. There was still a recce planes high up. Then the dive bombers came over. And they were just trying anything, hitting anything. You see? They were just dropping bombs here and there. And we just had your faith in God and hope he didn't land with us. So then the bombers went away. So they come out, men come out, the Slitters and everything. And at this time, I'd lost all contact with the battalion and with Mr. Snowden. He'd gone to headquarters for something. But I was an experienced sergeant at that time. And anyway, he said, so they came out, the Slitters, and having a cigarette and chatting at the edge of the, what's it? Then you heard this in the air. This is the Doniers, did they call them?
Yeah.
And they came off the sea, up. They'd been at sea level. So that they wouldn't be spotted. And they came up. Now, in the meantime, when we built the Slitters and the gun position, we put a roof on with grass and everything.
Yeah.
And little props to hold it. So you could look out. So I trained the men, and I don't know the signal was. I put a very light up, throw back your covers, and let go. So they came over, and it was rather frightening. They came right over, and I daren't open up too soon. So I had to wait till they were well over, and they started dropping. Then I put the very light up, and they opened up with everything they'd got. You might as well have said catapults as well. And I think I've said it in my other thing, that they were shooting each other, the German planes.
Yeah.
They were bumping into each other, crashing into each other. And I had no casualties at that time. So we wiped out the first drop, really. One or two escaped into the high ground. So we did what they were trained to do. They camouflaged everything, put the covers back on. And I said, shift as many paratroops as you can before the recce planes come up. So they shifted most of the white parachutes and put them in among the rocks and put rocks on them. Because you couldn't dig or anything.
No.
And if it was a bit of a cafe, a cave, you put as many in as you could. By this time, there may have been an odd German or two kicking about, but they weren't causing any trouble, so we camouflaged everything again. Sat waiting on the next wave to come in.
Yeah.
Because I said to the men at the time, I said, I'll calculate that they didn't know we were here, and there'll be more coming. So wait. So anyway, an odd Messerschmitt came over, an odd bomber, didn't take notes. Another wave, heard the drone again. So the lads more or less cocked the guns and got ready for the next lot.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they did exactly the same. They didn't. They could see maybe one or two parachutes, but not what they expected. And they couldn't see any roaming troops. So they dropped another lot, and we got that lot too. By this time, the smell was getting terrible. Dead bodies. We couldn't bury the amount of dead bodies and smell. You used to have a hanky over your face.
Yeah, yeah.
So we got the next lot. Did exactly the same. Then, the next day, the next drop was away from the drone. You could see them dropping.
Yeah.
And by this time, I'd heard that my officer had been killed. In the first attack.
Yes.
Lieutenant Snow. Him and his batman got a mortar bomb between them in the slip trench. And a woman came and saw me years later and asked me about it.
What, her mother?
About the son. I says, oh yes, he's batman to Mr. Snow. Both killed him. Anyway, that was another point. So, they started dropping them away over. And we could hear firing going on most of the day and every all on. And the only ammunition we gave is when we had to fight off any planes trying to land. And my gun has dealt with that pretty well. I think they enjoyed it. But there was one or two big Sunderland flying boats. I think one landed on the drone, crashed on the drone. And when we searched it, we got crockery, cutlery, everything on it.
Yeah.
Anyway, we took all the rations off it and everything.
Yeah.
Because the crew had disappeared, don't know where they went. Anyway, by this time, when we realised they were dropping them maybe a couple of miles away, it was going to get more serious. They were going to come in as a fighting force, ground force. But before I could decide what to do, or defences and everything, I got word through my signaler from headquarters. By this time, Colonel Hamilton had gone sick. I think it was his eyesight had gone. He went blind eventually. And a major Pitcairn. Anyway, he took over. And I got word, prepare your platoon to evacuate the Suda Bay by foot at so and so many hours, and so on. No smoking, no talking. Made our way down about 2 miles, 3 miles. But we kept, and to keep contact with the enemy until the last minute.
Yes, yes.
They didn't know we were when we went, so we marched down. And got into Suda Bay. It was black. Nearly fell into the sea off the quayside. But anyway, we're waiting there at the quayside. Next thing is a huge black foam come up with a quayside. It was unbelievable. It was a destroyer. Mm-hmm. No lights on, nothing. Scraping the side. And it was most mysterious, most... You know, you couldn't understand it. This huge black, like a cloud, come down. Mm. It was a destroyer. Next thing, it was a sailor's voice. Said, come on, you lot, get on board, quick. We're not waiting all effing night here. 10 minutes and we're away. You see, so, clambered on and everything. And one or two soldiers had turned him back. He said, never mind that, come on, I'll turn him back to pick up stuff, you see. So one of my men, I think I mentioned before, Tim Hay, this is the one.
Yes.
This is the one I always had. He came up to me, he says, I'm not coming aboard. I said, why not? He said, I have one or two things to settle on the island. He says, the loss of one or two of our lads' lives. I said, what is it? He says, oh, I'll tell you someday, he says. But I'm not coming. I forget what I said. After something, I gave him so many days or something. I said, if you don't report back to the battalion.
I think we're getting near to the end of the tape, are we not?
Yes.
And so, how much is the... Colonel John McGregor, disc number 2, talking to RSM Harry Wharton. And we are continuing the story of his experiences in Crete in 1941.
Yeah. Right, now, as we were getting on the destroyer in the darkness, with what kit we were carrying, remember we'd left everything back in the carriers, which we dismantled. I'll tell you about that any time. And we just got on board and stood where we were on the deck. As we were told, we'd been transferred to cruisers out in the bay. Well, we got out to them, we saw the cruisers in the darkness, in the light of the sky against the horizon. And you've got to hand it to these Navy chaps. They were pulling alongside each other like two buses in the middle, and the sea was rough, and they were just transferring troops from one to the other. And you got to hand it to the pilots of these cruisers and destroyers. No effort, no hesitation, just as though they were coming into Hyde Park or something. And then we were out steaming for Egypt, Alexandria. Yeah. I could mention that when we left the island of Crete and the drone, Heraklion, I demobilized all the carriers by putting 36 grenade detonators.
Immobilized?
Aye, immobilized. In the cell in the heads. And left it completely wired up. So if they pressed the starter, it'd be like a bomb. So we left it at that. And we destroyed everything else. Punctured all food tins and whatever. Anyway, we got out onto the cruisers. And it was on... I was on the Dido. She was hit 3 times. I lost more men on the Dido than what I lost on Crete. We were down in the petty officer's lounge. I was a sergeant. And one of the petty officers said to me, "Sorry for you chaps on the island there getting hammered with Messerschmitts and dive bombers." And I said, "Jock, get me off this ship onto land. I'll be much happier." See the different views of the sailor and the soldier. Anyway, as dawn was breaking, we were still at sea, cruising towards Alexander. And the skipper of the Dido said, "All men with arms, machine guns, rifles, pistols, anything, up on deck. Here they come, Stukas." Dive bombers. So we all went upstairs onto the deck and pointed the guns skyward. And they came over, a fleet of them, I forget how many there'd be, it'd be about 30 of them. Went for the Dido, the Orion, I don't know what the others were, but there's about 5 cruisers. And they let everything go, and of course, every time a Stuka hit the water, there was a big cheer. But they didn't keep it up too long. They were getting heavy casualties from the Navy. Because I think they came in saying, "We've got them on the run." But they didn't realise that the skipper had said everything on deck, fire. And it was just a sheet of bullets going on. And it caught a lot of them. The small arms caught a lot of them. It's apart from the boofers. There was another slaughter at sea going in. And we got into Alex. And although in the museum here, there's a photograph of a piper on the Dido playing him into Alex, I don't remember it. I don't remember it. Maybe I was downstairs in the rounding up some of the men getting things. But I didn't look for that. I didn't see it. But I quite believe it. I quite believe it. Because when the Dido was hit amidships in the gun turrets, the metal that joined the turret to the bulkhead and all that, when a bomb exploded near it, it went through like a razor blade. They didn't overlap at that time. The metal was just shit. And sailors and soldiers were plastered on the boat wall. So when we got into Alex, they tried to get the Egyptian labourers in there to get the bodies off and everything. They wouldn't move. So I just put my platoon down and got them up. They got them up. Started shifting the bodies and everything. And then we went into a big hangar or a warehouse and just said, "Right, get down to it. We're on the move tomorrow morning." That was it. There was no stress or any, or counselling. Just said, "Get down to it and have a couple hours sleep before we move." So then we went back to Alex. Was it Alex? Egypt. Chufa. Started getting re-equipped again. And there was a list came out, people, anybody wanted to go on a 2-3 days leave to Cairo. Well, a lot of the men, we'd all soldiered together. Well, the hot-blooded one wanted to leave, but the rest were quite happy to stay in the battalion and go to the mess for a drink and all this and get equipped ready for the next move, you see. And I'm not sure we went to Syria before we went to Tobruk. We're in the Bitter Lake. No. We did the Bitter Lakes. Shadowing the Italian ships going through the canal.
Yes.
There's a road running alongside. And we went so far by truck and handed over to an English unit and carried on. And our job was to stop anybody coming off the ships. Because for some reason at that time, Italy wasn't at war with us. So we did that for quite a long time. Then suddenly that stopped. And there was one or two ships in the Bitter Lakes. And we had to go on board and search them. But we spent quite a nice time there because a lot of the boys learnt to yacht in these small yachts.
Yes.
And how to do the sails and everything. And they were having a great time. But then we got moved. I think it was Egypt. It was Syria against the Vichy French. Yes.
Yes, could be. Yes.
Now, when we got into Syria at Beirut, Damascus, we did hear that we were to do battle on a French training ground, peacetime training ground, that it all pinpointed artillery ranges and everything. And this was going to be a very trying attack because they knew all the ranges and everything. And then we were just going in when word came to us, we're in Beirut. Yeah, Beirut. On the outskirts of Beirut. Next thing was, prepare your carrier platoon to drive in all French tanks, ammunition carriers, to a central point. See, my drivers, my gunners, my henchmen, were all drivers. And we're all gunners. So I had, 36 could drive. So they used to go by truck down to where these tanks and things, and little gun ammunition carriers to big tanks. And driving a tank in a week, very little difference, it's levers. And we had to rendezvous on ground. Now, when we were driving these tanks into a central place, there was my own trucks standing there, and they brought us back to pick up others, you see. And it was well organized. All we had to do was obey the orders. So, you know what we found? French tanks, big tanks with turrets and gun turrets, dug in with the turret and gun at ground level. And the tank buried with ammunition and everything. And the ground was flat. Nothing could have got over it. If we'd attacked in that, I don't know if we, the British, knew about these tanks. But you see the look at the lads when they such, good God, if we'd run into that. They were just...
They're hauled down.
Yeah?
They were hauled down.
Oh, they got mowed down. These turrets could swing. And then later on, when we had a look at it, we'd look at one or two. Where did got a gun turret, say, in that position? And another gun turret in that position. Another one here. At each gun turret, there was pegs, wood, to stop the gun going too far right or too far left, firing on their own tank turrets. It was well done. And we thought, well, what the hell are all these for? Until one of my gunners says, that's to stop the traversing.
And these were the tanks belonging to the Vichy French.
Yeah. So, it would have been a slow, it would have been terrible. But anyway, they packed in. And also, on the high ground, was artillery pulse, and they had the range of the area, because in one or two of the dugouts in the hill, they had dug up, we found plans with it sort of spread out and showing ranges, and this is what it would be.
Yeah.
So that's Syria. So we didn't spend much time in Syria. Thankfully, he didn't have to go across. When he looked back, he said, "If we had to go across that ground, whew, dear me, it was a death trap."
Yes.
Clever, no doubt. Clever. They sacrificed a lot of tanks, but they'd have taken a lot of lives. Wouldn't have.
So from Syria.
So when Syria. Now let me think. Tobruk.
And on your journey to Tobruk, was that by land or partly by sea?
I'm just thinking now. We went to Tobruk by sea.
From?
Alexandria. From Jufa, Alex, that area,
yes.
Canal area. We went up at night in convoy. In flat-bottom boats, towed by destroyers. And also tanks were on these flat-bottom boats, being towed by destroyers. And it's at night, no lights, anything. And as we pulled into Tobruk Harbour, same like Crete, there was shipwrecks all over the place. The destroyers going in sometimes were hitting a sunken mast or a sunken hull or something. You could hear the scraping. And eventually the doctors at Tobruk again told to hurry up and get off the harbour, because there was a big gun, Italian gun, called Bardia Bell, that used to come out when there's anything in the harbour and shove some shells over. And this is where the ships had been hit. So when we saw what had happened, we were pretty quick and getting out. So anyway, Bardia Bell opened up just as we were finishing. So we got out of the harbour quick, because it was a big shell. We didn't know what size of shell, but it was a big shell all right. And of course, we heard rumours that there'd been two or three ships sunk, laden with spirits and everything, whiskey and everything. And later on, jocks used to dive on these ships to try and get the loot. Some of them got it too. So anyway, we got off and got into, it was a very airy in Tobruk. Tobruk looked like one of these places you see now on the TV just now, this Middle East trouble. Everything broken. And we got on this transport and they took us up and into just wasteland. He said, "This is it." Now Tobruk had a red line, a green line, or a blue line, or a blue line, a green line. There's three lines of defence. The front one was attack. The next line is a big perimeter, 26 mile, I think. Bardia Road, Benghazi Road, and all these. Yeah.